Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, with laundry room designs meant to bring calm to everyday routines. More at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Jim Gaffney had an almost perfect childhood. He was 8 years old when, in 1963, his parents moved the family into Wedgwood, a quiet subdivision in Florissant in North St. Louis County. Jim made friends with the neighborhood kids there, playing sports and swimming in the creek that wound through the landscape behind their house. That stream was a place of happy memories for Jim. Its name is Coldwater Creek.
We were always playing in the creek, making mudslides on the other side. You know, my mom said, stay out of the creek, that's dirty. And I was, okay, Mom. And you know, of course, we were down in the creek. But we, you know, during the summer, that's about all we did is played in the creek. And then little sports around the subdivision. So yeah, it was a fun time growing up there. We thought we'd stay there the rest of our lives. We had no idea we were swimming in uranium waste. We just thought it was just playtime.
By the time he'd reached his 20s, Jim was dealing with cancer. It would be decades before the full story came out that the federal government had dumped radioactive waste near two landfills, burying material the U.S. used to build atom bombs that ended World War II, and that part of the story, like the toxic material itself, was covered up. But it didn't stay hidden. The effects of exposure to that contamination kept showing up. When Jim Gaffney got married, he and his wife Susie moved into a house in the same area. Their young son also played in Coldwater Creek. And like Jim, he too was diagnosed with cancer.
What really got me very interested was when Joey had to go down to Barnes after he had his original thyroidectomy, and they knew it had spread everywhere within his neck. And they said, he is like Chernobyl. He is just like Chernobyl. This is what happens when people get exposed to radiation. All these people had massive cases of spread thyroid cancer. And they said, what's Joey been exposed to? I said, absolutely nothing.
That was Susie Gaffney. She and her husband, Jim, are just two of hundreds, perhaps thousands of people who've gotten sick in the decades since radioactive waste was dumped in North St. Louis County in the 1970s. Today, Jim's living with Hodgkin's lymphoma, as well as blood cancer, bladder cancer, and bone marrow cancer. Their stories and those of others who lived near Coldwater Creek are at the center of a news article out today by journalist Mike Fitzgerald. The piece examines the present moment when public officials are finally seeming to take the problem seriously, even as people like Jim Gaffney continue to suffer serious health consequences. Here to talk with me about the ongoing legacy of radioactive waste in Coldwater Creek and the people impacted by it, I'm joined by the author of that new article, journalist Mike Fitzgerald. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's great to be back. Thank you.
Now, Mike, you have covered this issue for years. How is this piece different? And what was it like getting to know people like the Gaffneys?
Well, this story reminds me of that great line from William Faulkner. The past is never dead. It's not even past. It strikes me that just the kind of suffering these people went through, suffering that many, many others have also endured, but not getting any attention. And I think this is a story, most of all, about egregious government and corporate negligence. Mm-hmm. But it's also a story about the power of grassroots activism and the heroism of individual activists. Mm-hmm. It's very uplifting in a way, even though the topic could be pretty difficult to deal with.
Right. Now, Mike, can you give us a reminder about where this radioactive waste was dumped such that it would affect so many people?
Oh, sure.
And it was not dumped into Coldwater Creek. So how is it that it got there?
Well, somewhere around the late 1940s, a company called Mallinckrodt was refining, still refining, enriched uranium. And the residue of that process, which was like this dirt-like substance, was dumped at a landfill near Lambert International Airport at the very head of the Coldwater Creek. There were hundreds and hundreds of metal barrels were dumped there. There was no effort made to ensure that it did not leak, and eventually over time these barrels corroded and emitted the waste into the creek.
Mm-hmm.
Decades passed before anyone realized the dangers involved. Unfortunately, no one notified the people of this area of North County about the dangers they faced. This is also at a time when North County was rapidly growing in population because of McDonnell Douglas and Emerson Electric, and lots of people were moving in there. New subdivisions, new schools, new parks. It was a really exciting time. But no one knew about this dangerous legacy until probably the late 80s when the first newspaper articles started appearing. And even then, people still weren't catching on to the dangers they faced.
Mm-hmm. And Coldwater Creek is central to this story.
Yes.
For what reason?
Well, it's a 14-mile-long waterway that meanders very slowly northeast from the airport to the Missouri River. So it encompasses a huge part of the population of North St. Louis County.
Mm-hmm.
It was like any creek. It was attractive to kids who wanted to play on a hot summer day, or they skated on it when it froze up. They swam in it and slid down the creek banks just enjoying it like any kids would. But there was no effort to warn them of the dangers, even through the 1990s when the Army Corps of Engineers started digging up suspected radioactive material and trying to reclaim it.
Mm-hmm. Mike, you've called what happened with Coldwater Creek a cover-up. How is it that we know that?
Well, I didn't call it a cover-up per se, but certainly there was no effort to warn people what was going on. How can we say that? Well, there in July of 2023, with the help of our guest, Don Chapman, documents were obtained. The person who spearheaded this was the great Kay Dry, who has been called the Paul Revere of the nuclear age. She was determined to get the truth of this, so she fought this incredible battle to obtain documents from the government showing how our government and the corporate contractors completely downplayed the dangers of access to this creek. Was it a cover-up? I don't think it fits the definition of a cover-up, but mm-hmm. there was just this indifference to the dangers. And so many thousands of people were exposed to it unwittingly.
Mm-hmm. And we will be speaking with Dawn Chapman in just a moment. She's the founder of Just Moms STL. But I do want to get to one of the people you spoke with, Mike, for this new piece, and that's Kim Vizantin, who also grew up in the area of Coldwater Creek.
The reason that I got involved was I lost my son to a brain tumor. He was 6 years old when he died from a brain tumor that he was born with. His whole life, all he knew was cancer and chemotherapy and neurosurgeries. That was his entire existence. And you can't change that. I can't bring him back. So no amount of restitution is going to make me whole or anybody else in this area because, you know, money does not replace your loved ones.
That was Kim Vizantin. Now, Mike, your recent article describes how Kim not only saw the impact of radioactive waste on her own family, but was part of an effort that documented and mapped thousands of illnesses. What did that show?
What showed, for one thing, they took on work that the government just wasn't willing to do. They took it upon themselves as activists to put the pieces together. The backstory of this is people like Kim were noticing at high school reunions, like at McClure North, they were hearing all these stories of people getting sick or dying from cancer, and they couldn't understand it. So these women like Kim, she's used to be an engineer, and she had friends who were also big into data, mm-hmm. understanding data. They decided on their own to put the pieces of the puzzle together. They put together a Facebook pages. They got lots of input from residents, and then they started mapping where these cases of cancer, very rare cancers like cancer of the appendix, were occurring, and they put little red dots to mark where all these cases occurring. And lo and behold, the closer you were to growing up near the creek, the more likely you were to have some type of rare cancer.
Mm-hmm.
It was just too much to be a coincidence. It was obviously there was a cause and effect here.
Right. Now, earlier we heard from both Jim and Susie Gaffney. Mike, what was it about their story that stood out to you?
Well, what really got me was the fact this is a story about three friends. It wasn't just Jim Gaffney, but also his boyhood friends, George Solak and Tom Fisher. They all grew up together playing the creek. And within the past year, both Tom and George also came down with cancer. So you have these three childhood friends. They still remain very, very close friends today, who are now all battling cancer in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredibly compelling story of friendship, but also a resilience and survival. These people want to see justice done. And let's remember, this is every environmental story is a story about justice. They want justice done. They know the money won't make them whole or compensate for the pain and misery they've endured. But they also know that they need some acknowledgement from the government, that the government did wrong and somehow needs to set the record straight.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we've mentioned you've done reporting on this before, and it occurs to me that speaking with three men who were friends in their childhood, that unfortunately it takes some time to demonstrate what kinds of long-term effects there can be. Is multi-generational illness also a common story here?
It is. I mean, what we're seeing is the fact that we have so many people suffering cancer and autoimmune diseases in a very small area, and it's these people are almost like they're serving a sentence for growing up in the wrong part of town.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things that makes this story relevant is our senators Josh Hawley and Eric Schmidt are co-authoring legislation called the RECA Act, or Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, that would pay money out to the people who've lived in Coldwater Creek, as well as other areas that have been exposed to radiation, like people who live near Waste Lake landfill in Bridgeton, as well as throughout the rest of America. And you don't have to prove that the creek actually caused cancer, only that you lived there for 2 years since 1949. But, you know, like so many other efforts to redress a grievous harm, it's coming really late in the game, you know, decades and decades after the initial harm was caused. But it's something, and it's something that a lot of people see as their last chance to get the government to acknowledge the suffering they caused.
Right. We need to take a quick break, but we will be back shortly to continue this conversation about the impact of radioactive waste dumped in North St. Louis County and why federal agencies like the EPA and politicians are taking notice. Journalist Mike Fitzgerald's story was published this morning, a commission of the River City Journalism Fund. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Parrot Corporation, a contractor with over four decades of shaping the St. Louis landscape. More at Parrot.com.
Welcome back. Before the break, we were talking about the presence of radioactive contamination around places like the Westlake Landfill and Coldwater Creek, and how, for years, residents have tried to raise alarm. Their voices are finally being heard. Last month, Lee Zeldin, director of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, visited the area, including Westlake Landfill, and he pledged to clean up the toxic mess.
I'm here for the first time hearing these stories from the people who lived here. To hear this multi-generationally, where people are talking about their grandkids, this is something that should have been addressed a very long time ago. And how frustrating it must feel to be living here and your community, your family, your future is stalled, stuck in neutral, waiting for that level of action that the senator's demanding.
That was EPA Director Lee Zeldin speaking last month during a visit to St. Louis. And I should mention the senator that Zeldin noted is Missouri U.S. Senator Josh Hawley, who has also become a vocal supporter of that cleanup. Before the break, we talked about the impact of the environmental hazard and the people it's affected with Mike Fitzgerald, who's a journalist who's recently published a piece about this. I'd also like to introduce another voice to this conversation. Don Chapman is the co-founder of the group Just Moms STL, which advocates for cleanup of the Westlake landfill. Don, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Don and Mike, I'd like to get your impressions of this recent visit by Lee Zeldin and Josh Hawley. Don, you were at that event. What is it that stood out to you? You know, what was the significance of that visit?
So being able to have the opportunity to tell my story, the community story, and other stories, and then have him recognize the multi-generational impact. Because even this morning, we have a mom whose son now has a brain tumor that we found out about this morning that just had his biopsy done. He's out of surgery. And, you know, this, the weight of it in carrying these stories and just waiting for somebody to do the correct action so that there will come a day when the stories stop, right? Mm-hmm. And the illnesses stop and we can say, okay, we can move forward and there won't be any more of this. Because every day now there's a new Kim, there's a new Jim. Mm-hmm. You know, this just keeps going and going until the last bit of this is cleaned up.
Yeah. We heard from Jim and Susie Gaffney and they were talking about the impact of cancer, an illness that seemed to be very much connected to the radioactive waste in this area. And Don, you have also experienced the health impacts of this, right?
I have. I'm a little emotional today because I'm actually waiting for a blood test on my own youngest now to come back, and I'm scared to death. Mm-hmm. And my husband's scared, and what ends up being a simple doctor's visit for something routine just never is. You just cannot take it for granted. And Mike did such a great job in his story showing how we are haunted. This haunts us. There is this spirit, this ghost following us, and we never know when it's going to jump out and grab us. And it's going to be our turn. Maybe somebody wakes up one morning and there's a lump under their armpit. Maybe it's a headache that lasts a couple weeks, and then an MRI happens, and then it's the worst case scenario. It just, this is life for us, and the heaviness and the weight of that and the unfairness, he captured it. This is one of the most well-written stories about this issue that I've ever read.
What does it do that others have not, Don?
It tells the story of the emotional human impact, not just the cancers, but the weight of living with this and waiting for the diagnosis. And it ties it into the fact that the Jim and his friends, that is so relatable in St. Louis to have that group of friends. For them to share this, for this to be one of the things they have in common, to be sick from this creek is just heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. And that it's not something when you read this story for Susie and Jim, this was not something they even thought was possible for their life. You know, they had dreams. They did everything right. They moved to be close to their parents. They made amazing decisions, but somebody did not tell them that this creek was contaminated and denied them the ability to make the best decision for their family, because there's no way they would have let their kid in this creek. And mm-hmm. and people knew during the time when their son was growing up and could have put a stop to it.
I mean, one question that drove my story was, what is a human life worth? Mm-hmm. Because the RECA Act says you get $50,000 if you're still alive. But if you're the survivor, someone passed away, you only get $25,000. Now, in $25,000, that's a new car, I guess. But that in no way, in any way, covers the countless sleepless nights, the worries, the waiting in emergency rooms, the stress, the constant stress. How do you put a price on that? And mm-hmm. just what is a human life worth? And that's something we in America, lawyers and insurance people are constantly talking about. What is a human life worth? And we never really address it, though, because you can't put a price on a human life, yet we do that constantly, literally every minute of every day.
You mentioned the RICA Act earlier, Mike. To what extent, you know, is the RICA Act something that attempts to put a value on those lives? And can you explain what that act is briefly?
Well, I mean, and this is where people like Dawn and Karen Nickel and others have come in. They've, because of their efforts, they've opened the discussion. The RICA Act originally was passed in the 1990s to compensate people who were exposed to radiation, poisonous radiation, after being exposed to atomic detonations. Now, they're trying to expand it with the help of Senator Hawley and Schmidt to include people like those who grew up in Coldwater Creek or near Westlake Landfill. So basically, this is a $50 billion bill that over 10 years would pay for things like screenings, would provide compensation, and so forth. You know, this is a very difficult budget climate, though. I mean, it's obvious the Trump administration is seeking to cut costs in a lot of ways. So the headwinds are blowing against him. Mm-hmm. But for the fact that Lee Zeldin would come here and recognize this shows there's a lot of serious intent behind it. I think there is a desire to make this happen. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, it's so difficult. How do you repair the wrongs of the past? You can't do it with a check.
Right.
And you're not going to bring the people who have died back to life. So how do you, I don't know, we in America have a strange attitude about these things, like with the opioid crisis. There's an opioid settlement, but that's not going to bring back the tens of thousands of people died from opioid overdoses either.
Right.
But we want to just kind of write a check and move on. And you can't move on, like Faulkner tells us.
And to that point, you know, at the start of our show, we heard from Jim Gaffney, how he played in Coldwater Creek as a child. Since his 20s, he's been diagnosed with multiple forms of cancer. And he actually did speak with our producer, Danny Wisentowski, about the need for compensation as well as his hope for the future and for people like him.
If we can just take the politics out of everything and just look at it, we're all human beings. Just if this was your family, you'd want to find out what's going on, how are we going to clean up, and what are we going to do to reimburse the people that were dumped on by the government by their careless. I know the uranium had to be made for the bomb, but the careless handling of it afterwards is the problem. And then that was the cover-up when they found out it leaked into the creek, and then they kept it out of everybody's. They built Wedgwood after they already knew it, but the builders didn't know they were building on toxic waste. But it's just come clean. Most of the people are dead now; they can't sue them. Just clean it up and help people that are definitely in this uranium zone. Give them lifetime health care. If they don't give them any money, give them lifetime health care so they don't go broke trying to pay off these medical bills to help fix them.
That was Jim Gaffney. Jim grew up playing in Coldwater Creek in North St. Louis County. He is one of hundreds of people who have faced a lifetime of health challenges, including cancer. Don, for people who are sick, what do they need? I mean, is money or lifetime health care enough, or is it merely a good start?
You know, sick people, first and foremost, want to know why they are sick. So they want the acknowledgement that this happened to them and it shouldn't have. And I do think that some of them need the compensation and want that. But for them, it's the apology that comes with RICA and the recognition that the government caused this and that this was not an act of God, that they did nothing wrong, they made every right choice they were supposed to make, that this is happening to them because somebody else made the bad decisions. But I think the other thing is that there is power in hearing somebody else tell your story. You know, the power behind this interview and Jim's words, even to me as somebody who's watching now maybe both of my kids very sick from this, is I'm not alone, right? This is happening to someone else, and we connect over that.
Mm-hmm. Don, I want to leave this last question to you. I mean, there is a promised visit from Robert F. Kennedy Jr. What would that visit from the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services represent?
So we, Karen and I just heard from the senator's office, Senator Hawley's office this morning, that that is going to happen, although we don't have a date for it. And I think that as the top person in charge of all the health in the United States, his recognition that this is real and this has happened is going to help the legislation. But to all the point at this table, it's going to get this cleaned up. We have to stop the exposures in St. Louis. Otherwise, there will continue to be more Jim Gaffneys. Mm-hmm.
Don Chapman is the co-founder of the group Just Moms STL. It advocates for cleanup of the Westlake landfill. And Mike Fitzgerald is a journalist and contributor to River City Journalism Fund. His latest piece, out today, examines the legacy of illness in the former neighbors of Coldwater Creek. You can read it at our website. That's stlpr.org. Mike and Don, thank you so much for joining us today.
My great pleasure. Thank you.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.